A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He was trying to rescue his home server after a ZFS corruption incident, picked up a new SSD, ready to go, and the entire project got stopped cold by a single M4 screw holding the heatsink on. He tried every precision bit in his set, spent 2 hours going down the YouTube rabbit hole, and it was his wife Hannah who finally suggested locking pliers. That got it out. His question, distilled, is... what should every hardware tinkerer know about screw removal, and what tools should they actually have on hand, so this never happens again?
2 hours on one screw.
I've been there. You've been there. Every listener nodding right now has absolutely been there.
You know what made it worse? The rest of the project was waiting. New SSD, fresh ZFS pool ready to go, home assistant down, the family asking when the lights are going to work again, and you're sitting there with a 4mm bolt telling yourself, I build servers, I can handle a screw.
The M4 screw is the great equalizer. It doesn't care about your certifications, your years of experience, your perfectly organized parts bin. It sits there in its little threaded hole and dares you.
It really is. And here's the thing, the screw wasn't defective. Everything that happened to that little M4 socket head cap screw was predictable from the engineering. I looked at what Daniel described once you told me about the prompt. Aluminum heatsink, server environment, probably been in there for years with thermal cycling, and we're talking about an M4 screw with a 3mm hex drive. That is a tiny engagement surface. You've got maybe 1.5mm of depth on that hex socket, and 6 tiny contact faces, each one carrying all the torque you're trying to apply.
Walk me through it. Why did that screw win? And I mean from the physics up. Because I think most of us, when we strip a screw, we just think cheap screw or wrong size bit and move on. But you're saying there's a whole engineering story here that explains exactly why Daniel was stuck for 2 hours.
Let's start with the drive type first, because this is something most people don't realize, and it's one of my favorite pieces of engineering trivia because it reframes the whole problem. The Phillips head screw, and that's what most of us think of when we picture a stripped screw, was deliberately designed to fail.
You're saying the engineers wanted this.
Phillips patented the design in 1936, and the explicit goal was what's called cam out. The driver is supposed to eject from the screw head at a certain torque. This was a feature for automated assembly lines. The torque limiting thing before torque limiting drivers existed. You didn't want some worker on the Ford line over tightening everything and snapping bolt heads off. Phillips solved that by making a screwdriver that pops out when it hits the limit.
The thing we curse in our home labs is working exactly as designed. The screw isn't failing us. We're failing to understand what the screw was built to do.
The engineer in 1936 is high-fiving himself, and we're in 2026 crying into a pile of rounded-out screws. But in Daniel's case, he was dealing with a socket head cap screw with a 3mm hex drive, which is a different animal. Hex drives strip for different reasons. Usually because the fit isn't perfect or the bit is worn, or, and this is critical, the bit material is softer than the screw itself. And that last one is the trap.
Okay. Wait. The bit being softer than the screw? I'd always assumed the screw was the weaker piece. You buy a pack of screws for a few bucks. You assume they're made of some mystery alloy that's one step above pot metal. And your driver bits, those are tool steel. Those are the hard things.
This is the metallurgy trap that everyone falls into. Those M4 screws you buy in bulk online, the shiny black ones that come in packs of 100 for $3, they're commonly grade 10.9 steel. That's a metric property class rating. A 10.9 screw has a minimum tensile strength of about 1,000 megapascals. For reference, a standard grade 8.8 screw is around 800 megapascals. These are not soft fasteners. They're heat-treated, quenched and tempered, alloy steel. Most consumer screwdriver bits, especially the ones included with that $30 precision driver set, are made from S2 steel, which is an impact-resistant tool steel. Hardness typically sits around Rockwell C58 to 60. Excellent for impact resistance. S2 is tough, it handles shock well, but a 10.9 hardened M4 screw can actually be harder, and when your bit is softer than your fastener, the bit is going to deform. The corners round off on the bit.
The screw is just sitting there laughing. The bit is what's giving up first.
Then you try another bit from the same set. Same result, except now the screw head's corners are starting to round too, because the first bit already chewed up the engagement surface. So now you've got a partially stripped screw, worn bits, and neither is making good contact anymore. It's a compounding failure. Each attempt makes the next attempt harder.
You swap bits 3 more times, each time hoping this one bites. By the time you've tried the 4th bit, the screw head is basically a tiny smooth bowl. There's nothing left for any hex key to grab.
That's when the real frustration sets in, because you know it shouldn't be this hard, and yet... You're applying more and more downward force, you're gripping the driver so tight your knuckles go white and the bit just spins. That polished socket is reflecting the overhead light back at you like a little mirror of defeat.
The moment you realize you're applying downward force like you're trying to push the screwdriver through the motherboard, and the bit still spins. You're practically standing on the thing and it's just rotating serenely in its hole.
And let's talk about some actual numbers from this case. Daniel had a 4mm diameter screw. M4 by 0.7 thread pitch is almost certain, probably 12 to 16 millimeters in length, threaded into an aluminum heatsink. Two different metals with two very different coefficients of thermal expansion. Aluminum's coefficient is about 23.1 micrometers per meter per degree Celsius. Steel is just under 12, almost exactly double. Which means that every time that servo rack heats up from operation, the aluminum is expanding twice as much as the steel screw is. Multiple thermal cycles a day, dozens of cycles a week, for 3 or 4 or 5 years. The aluminum grows and shrinks around the steel threads like a tiny thermal ratchet. And in a server, these things were probably spending a few days running at 40 or 50 degrees Celsius ambient around the CPU, then maybe cooling back to room temperature during maintenance windows, going up to maybe 60 when the fan curve was too aggressive.
Now you're creating microscopic gaps, little spaces opening and closing with every cycle.
And for a 4mm diameter bolt with a 100 degrees Celsius thermal swing, a naive back-of-envelope calculation says about a tenth of a millimeter of differential expansion. It's small, but in a thread with 0.7 pitch clearance, that adds up. That's enough to create a mechanical locking effect over time. The aluminum squeezes down on the steel threads, then relaxes, then squeezes again. Each cycle works the fastener a little tighter.
A tenth of a millimeter of difference, and a screw is absolutely seized. That's the margin we're dealing with. It's almost nothing.
If that were your only problem. But add to that galvanic corrosion. When you have steel and aluminum in direct contact with any moisture present, even tiny humidity levels, they form a galvanic couple. The aluminum, being the more anodic of the two, starts to oxidize and corrode. White aluminum oxide forms in and around the threads, and aluminum oxide is not a nice smooth lubricant. It's a hard, gritty, abrasive powder that packs into the thread clearance and acts like cement.
I've seen that. The white chalky stuff. You take a screw out of an old laptop heatsink and it looks like someone dusted the threads with powdered sugar.
That's the fingerprint of a seized fastener. That white powder is aluminum oxide, and it's basically sand that grew in place. It increases the friction in the threads dramatically. What should be a smooth helical ramp is now a rough, packed surface full of hard particles.
All of which was probably happening, silently, in his server for 5 years. He had no idea. The server was running fine. The heatsink was doing its job. And underneath it, this little metallurgical drama was playing out one thermal cycle at a time.
Zero visible indication, and then you go to remove the heatsink on a Sunday evening, and the screw is effectively welded. Let's add one more layer on top. Loctite, though I'm not sure whether the manufacturer or the builder applied it on this server. A lot of these pre-built workstation and server motherboards do ship with thread locking compound pre-applied to the M4 heatsink mounts. It prevents them loosening from fan vibration over time.
Loctite blue would maybe still be manageable with a hand driver. I've broken blue Loctite bonds before with just a good quality hex key and some patience.
But if they used red, so the blue Loctite 242 has a breakaway torque of about 6 Newton meters. an average precision screwdriver driver that perfectly engages a clean M4 socket head can maybe apply 2 to 4 newton meters before the handle starts to slip in your hand. Red Loctite 271 requires about 20 newton meters. You are not applying 20 newton meters of torque with an interchangeable bit set and a 6 millimeter diameter precision screwdriver handle. The math just doesn't work. Your hand would need to be a bench vise.
That's with a clean head. With a partially stripped 3mm hex, you're maybe getting half of that. So now you need 40 newton meters from a tool that can maybe deliver 2.
The plastic deformation starts then. The corners roll, then you keep applying force and it polishes the rest of the socket smooth. The math is fascinatingly awful. You're watching a cascade failure in real time, and each attempt to fix it makes the numbers worse.
Let me lay the misery out. To recap the first hour of Daniel's project. Aluminum heatsink, thermal expansion double that of steel, 3 years of humidity-driven galvanic corrosion, possibly a thread locker that alone exceeds the grip of a hand driver, and the one and probably only perfectly fitting bit that came with the screw set was the same hardness or softer than the fastener itself. No magic rubber band technique handles that. The screw won.
No screwdrivers were going to change the outcome at all. That's the absolute crucial takeaway. No driver, no matter how precise, was going to handle a seized, possibly Loctite, locked bolt mated with an aluminum socket that had been a galvanic battery for years. You could have had a $500 set of German hex keys, and the result would have been the same. The screw head would have stripped, just with more expensive tools.
Locking pliers did.
Locking pliers delivered. When the locking pliers came, the screw lost, and the trick is to grab it perpendicular to the screw with the pliers parallel to its circumference as you take hold. The absolute clamping advantage and mechanical advantage of locking pliers, even basic $12 Henry brand ones, is an order of magnitude above any screwdriver because the screws are grabbed squarely in the hardened teeth, setting a static load that is magnitudes higher than a wet hand gripping an oily driver handle. All the frictional edge grip flaws vanish, so the teeth are just tearing into the outer diameter of the bolt head.
This is why Hannah's suggestion was the right one. She wasn't thinking about hex keys and metallurgy. She was thinking, you need to grab that thing and turn it.
She bypassed the entire problem. The hex socket was destroyed, but the outside of the screw head was still perfectly intact. The locking pliers don't care about the hex socket. They care about the outside diameter, which was untouched. It's a completely different engagement strategy.
Now, everything you just described feels unfair. You want that knowledge, maybe, sooner. But to know about it, you need some kind of mental flowchart. So, walk me through the actual decision flow the next time somebody wants to do it right before burning hours into frustration, the way most of us have.
We'll divide it into 3 tiers. Tier 1 is, this is still a good day and we try to drive home. Tier 1 is non-destructive, good enough for undamaged or slightly damaged heads. Tier 2 is, it's officially a heist, a rescue mission. The screw is the casualty, but the component and the thread may survive, currently likely still cheaper. Tier 3 is the absolute nuclear option where everything is a conversation about motherboards.
Start with Tier 1, the rubber band trick. This is the one everyone hears about. You put a wide rubber band between the driver tip and the stripped head, press down hard, and turn. Does it actually work, or is it internet folklore?
The rubber band between the driver tip and stripped head, classic because the increase in static friction between a floppy rubber layer squeezing into the tool marring and making a mold is significant across different surfaces, especially hex broaches inside cheap drivers. Slick steel ratios dry are 0.16 or so friction coefficient, while a tough rubber deforming on dried profiles gives you 0.6 to a bit over 8/10 static filling. Several dry runs would prove something happening instead of nothing.
It's not magic, it's just friction. The rubber conforms to the damaged surfaces and creates more contact area than metal, on metal wood.
And it works best when the damage is minor. If you've got a hex socket that's just starting to round, the rubber band can fill those tiny gaps and give you enough bite to break the screw free. If the socket is already a polished bowl, the rubber band isn't going to save you. But at that early stage, it's absolutely worth trying.
What about the impact driver? I've seen people recommend those manual impact drivers you hit with a hammer, the kind that translate downward force into rotational force.
For home tools, a manual impact driver, the kind you hit with a very small hammer, not a screw gun. You put a directly protruding bit that can take that shock without folding into the mated profile slot, and then hammer that to break the static friction and adhesive grip they call breakaway, also release some corrosion locking. The shock breaks the bonds that are holding the screw in place.
Twist and smack. It's almost percussive maintenance, but with a tool designed for it.
Hand hitter gets maybe 3 to maybe 5 foot-pounds impulsed. Those magnetic impactors get so much more, perhaps hitting 45 to 50 pound foot for compact tools nowadays, but actual small and confined positions inside a rig of components won't accommodate all that. Plus, we are on a tiny 3mm hex. You smack too much from battery-powered charger guns, you overturn and shear. You'll snap the head right off.
Probably Nolly's call for a tight heatsink, but good for something like an old rusted bracket the entire chassis can handle. Something where you've got room to swing, and the fastener is bigger.
Good for a lot else. The heat thing, though, for this aluminum versus steel exact situation, the one that was up there, Tier 1, is heaven sent. Bring any hot air station set to a conservative 140 to maybe in confidence to avoid starting pop damage to the assembly wall, which with standard lead-free nothing drops below above weld to 100 maybe, and you give it 60 to 90 seconds to push on. After that, the looser tolerances reveal the different material difference that then go tight, but in reverse, because now we open the hole different from the pair threads changing shape. You twist while hot when doing this.
Wait, explain that again. You're saying heat the aluminum, and because aluminum expands more than steel, the hole actually gets bigger around the screw.
The aluminum heatsink expands more than the steel screw, so the threaded hole in the aluminum grows slightly in diameter, loosening its grip on the steel threads. It's using the thermal expansion difference in your favor instead of letting it work against you. You're essentially reversing the thermal ratchet that seized it in the first place.
Is there advantage to doing hot? And the extra stick bit as a single combination with the plastic former, the strap and aluminum, just doing it both front here so we do not retwist minimal gains?
Take a broader or stony slightly bigger, plus a catch trick. Actually works for clean socket again, sometimes at warm temp. Very light. You can combine heat with a slightly oversized bit or with the rubber band trick. The heat loosens the threads, and the enhanced friction from the rubber band or the tighter fitting bit gives you the engagement you need. It's a 1-2 punch.
Penetrating oil also goes in that ladder historically. You mentioned it going cold once and pressing over and hoping not well be out of aerosol today, wicking in for like right that helped him.
WD-40 is actually a water displacement formula. Good on dispelling wet, lousy on deep creep dissolution. The better user picks pure Croil or PB Blaster, sit days in while perhaps hot, and loosen that scale quite to wet into additional leverage for you deliver to the next try. Capillary tension breaks then. These true penetrating oils have extremely low surface tension, and they wick into the microscopic gaps in the threads. WD-40 is great for drying out a wet distributor cap. It's not great for breaking seized fasteners.
The penetrating oil sits, maybe overnight, maybe for a couple of days, and it works its way down into the threads through capillary action. Then you come back with heat and a good bit, and you've got a fighting chance.
That will fold into our half-second tier.
Let's go there. Daniel's eventual savior. But you mentioned there's a specific type that's better than the standard hardware store variety.
Locking pliers is Daniel's eventual better pick, the milled unit modern superiority specific called Vampliers, but the OEM under Japan Old Partnership, Engine Series, or comparable PZ series is cleverly exact inside head extraction because they drop specialized pre-grooved parabolic cutter edges near hard values, 58 to 60. Specific is hardness to exactly lock small, not squeeze damage outward from rounding the outer edge and flare excess diameter, rather clamp a crisp, strong grip. Unlike standard cheap and soft industry plier types where material bite eventually slide again easy. Putting leverage perpendicular across the rotate of the bolt. But once immediate swing near shaft access for downward, move steady control so you overcome the strongest resistance directly downward, which they handled, means getting minimal bruising. Almost no side gap motion needed if your torque arm stayed clean.
The key difference with these extraction-specific pliers is the jaw geometry. Standard locking pliers have serrated teeth that bite parallel to the axis of the pliers. These extraction pliers have vertical teeth that bite into the screw head from the side, and the jaws are curved to match the radius of the screw head. More contact area, less deformation of the head, better grip.
Vampire's engineers invented a nail remover and so of rescaling all the simple function that rescue this size. Standard locking tools too often drift when loads increase slowly, without dent correction pausing inside tool function. Quality separate materials and those hard HRCs before in its whole head tool type. The hardness of the jaw teeth is critical. If the teeth are softer than the screw, they'll deform and slip. These extraction-specific pliers use hardened tool steel jaws that can bite into a grade 10.9 screw without dulling.
Because the extra mechanical motion distributes force further beyond where it is forcing outward, flattened away final. You're not just squeezing harder, you're squeezing smarter.
The technique matters too. You don't just clamp on and twist. You clamp on, make sure the pliers are absolutely perpendicular to the screw axis, and then you apply slow, steady torque. No jerking, no sudden movements. You want the teeth to set into the metal and hold. A sudden jerk can cause them to slip, and then you've damaged the outside of the head too.
Let's go a moment to Tier 2 extractors. The left-handed cobalt bits. These are drill bits that cut in reverse, so as you drill into the screw, they're also applying loosening torque.
Good for narrower engagement. Smaller overall since just bite deeper, plus typically comes gripping mandrel on progressive rotation sets. The one piece currently liked is the Grabbit with its sharp forward insert finish, then bite simultaneously backward. Easier function carve while can guide hot straight. Their materials is hard specific, plus this makes no delay. Large either a line. You drill a small pilot hole with the forward cutting end, then flip the bit around and the reverse cutting end bites into that hole and backs the screw out.
Some people pursue the tiny cutting slot approach. Cut a slot in the screw head with a Dremel and use a flathead screwdriver. That makes me nervous inside adjacent property inside electronics board when shot debris jump widely with little disc moving, chattering. Metal shavings and circuit boards are not friends.
He would clear board guard or mask all then go light. Honestly, but deep enough like M4. Small being around, they slice inward after forming just decent connection, plus you wedge a widened flat bit for remove all torqued out from start of section, and which absolutely apply it spiral, not shear sideways under pressure too quickly before needed. But for finished product, the step degree gets done. Relative rare, now plus wide get easier. Easier get cost. You mask off the entire surrounding area with tape. You go slow, and you accept that you're going to need to clean thoroughly afterward. But it works. A flathead screwdriver in a cut slot can deliver a lot of torque.
We missed high clamping and tapping rethread total kill fail replace approach lastly. Those threadings set final strong press in times instead drilling retap also costs slower but keeps home alive. The helicoil or threaded insert approach. If you drill out the screw entirely and damage the threads, you can install a threaded insert and restore the hole.
That's tier 3. That's the nuclear option. You're drilling out the entire fastener, possibly damaging the original threads, and then you're installing a helicoil or a time cert to restore the threaded hole. It's time-consuming, it requires a steady hand and the right kit, but it saves the component. The motherboard isn't scrap. Just because one M4 hole is stripped, you can fix it.
Let's bring this back to Daniel's actual situation. He went through all of Tier 1, probably in the wrong order, got nowhere, and then Hannah handed him the locking pliers, and it was done in 30 seconds. What should his Tier 1 have looked like in order, if he'd had this conversation before he started?
First, assess the screw before you touch it. Look at the materials. Aluminum heatsink, steel screw, server that's been running for years, small hex drive. Before you even put a driver to it, you should be thinking this might be seized, so you start with penetrating oil. Croil or PB blaster, apply it, let it sit for at least an hour, ideally overnight, then you apply heat. A hot air station at around 140 Celsius, focused on the aluminum around the screw, not the screw itself. 60 to 90 seconds. Then you use the single best-fitting hex bit you own, with the rubber band trick if the fit isn't perfect, and you apply slow, steady torque. If it doesn't move immediately, stop. Don't keep turning. Don't strip the head. Go straight to tier 2.
The discipline is knowing when to stop. That's the mental flowchart. Not try harder, but try smarter. And if smarter doesn't work, escalate.
The screw tells you when it's not going to cooperate. Listen to it. The moment you feel the bit start to slip, that's the screw saying, "I'm not coming out this way." Don't argue with it. You will lose that argument.
Have the locking pliers in the drawer before you start. Not after 2 hours of frustration. Have them ready.
The locking pliers should be part of every hardware tinkerer's kit. They're not just for plumbing and automotive work. A good pair of extraction-specific pliers, or even just a quality set of standard locking pliers with sharp teeth, will save you more times than you can count. And they're $12. $12 versus 2 hours of your life and a strip screw that's now 10 times harder to remove.
That's the real takeaway from Daniel's story. The tool that saved him cost less than the lunch he probably skipped while fighting the screw. And it was his wife who wasn't invested in the "I can fix this with the right technique" mindset who saw the simple solution.
Sometimes the best engineering advice comes from outside the engineering mindset. Hannah looked at the problem and saw, things stuck in hole need to grab thing. Daniel was stuck in, I need to find the right hex key for this hex socket. The socket was already destroyed. The right hex key didn't exist anymore. But the outside of the screw head was fine. It just took fresh eyes to see it.
Our listener kit. The thing we want everyone to have on hand before they start their next hardware project. A set of quality hex bits where you actually know the hardness rating, not just the cheapest set on Amazon. A manual impact driver for the bigger stuff. A hot air station, or at least a decent heat gun with temperature control. Actual penetrating oil, not WD-40. A wide rubber band. And locking pliers. Ideally, the extraction-specific kind, but any good pair will do.
The patience to stop. That's the tool that doesn't come in a box. The patience to look at a screw, recognize the signs of a seized fastener, and go straight to the method that will work instead of the method that feels like it should work. Daniel's 2 hours weren't wasted because he lacked tools. They were wasted because he kept trying variations of the same approach that had already failed. Once he changed approaches entirely, the screw was out in seconds.
The M4 screw is the great equalizer, but it doesn't have to be the winner. Thanks for walking us through this one, Herman.
Now go check your server's heatsink screws before they seize. Preventative maintenance is a whole other episode.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.